Welcome to Meltdown to Mastery, empowering women to overcome midlife crisis by rewiring the subconscious mind. Feeling overwhelmed, disillusioned, stuck? We all have. Here we explore inspiration and empowerment to navigate through the tough times and move to a place where hearts soar, minds manifest, and bodies heal. Today we have Timothy Stutz, one of the most prolific authors of children's books alive today. Also founder of Transformations, a nonprofit dedicated to assisting people of all ages achieve their maximum potential, integrating body, mind, heart, and soul. Welcome, Timothy.
Oh, it's lovely to be with you and everyone listening, Jane. Thank you so much.
Excited to have you. So Timothy, yeah, you've put out 86 children's books to date. Switching on the love and bliss gene. How beautiful is that?
Quite beautiful, quite incredible, and quite a surprise to me.
Right? So beautiful. And two of them that I just love are Bliss Berry Bears Educational and Entertaining and Inspirational Fairy Tales of the Heart. I love those.
Yes.
So, yeah. And so you changed careers a couple times, I read. How did the whole children's story journey start?
Well, the children's journey started when I woke up one morning and the first words out of my mouth to my partner were, "If Hershey's can make chocolate kisses, I can make chocolate French kisses."
Yeah. French kisses. So
yes. And so I proceeded to have a pair of lips with the tongue curled out designed and was going to have somebody make the chocolate for me. And they ended up tripling the price when they saw that the packaging and everything might make this product take off really well. So not being able to afford triple the price, I learned how to make chocolate, opened up my own chocolate shop. And it was in that chocolate shop that I received a big box one day from UPS that I did not order. And because my address was on it, the driver would not take it back. So when he left, I opened up that box and looking at me were 50 little teddy bears. And at my previous career of being a certified public accountant and loving Hardy Boy books as a child and loving to investigate things, I found out who those bears belonged to. They ended up giving me the entire box. And I carried one of the bears with me in my car riding shotgun. And after about 2 weeks, I picked up that bear at a stoplight and looked at it and said, "Who are you?" And I was surprised to hear, "My name is Poet Bear." Surprised because I actually heard the bear talk to me. And not so surprised because I wrote a lot of love poetry at the time and philosophical poetry. So I decided to package my poetry in a little book along with some inspirational quotes of famous people and package it with the teddy bear and call it Tales of the Heart. And when I got the whole package together and ready for sale, my mom took one look at it and basically was real honest with me and said, "You blew it. That should have been a children's book." And I said, I gave her a copy of the book and I said, "Here, Mom, you can read this, but there's not one thing in there for children at all. I don't write for children." But 6 months later, almost to the day, I just woke up, just like I woke up with hearing that I could do French kisses. I woke up with an idea for a children's story fully in my head. And all I had to do was sit down and start writing and see what came out. And it's been that way ever since. I wrote one story and then more ideas kept coming and coming and coming, and they haven't stopped coming for the last 40 years.
Isn't it interesting how we get led in the right direction? And then just by being open to it, these inspirational things come to us. Is that, you know, yes. Is that one of the messages you tell people?
It's amazing to me that just following my heart and opening that chocolate shop, which did not work out, but it led me to writing children's stories, which is apparently what the universe and God wants me to do, since I've now written 88 of them. I've actually written two more since those 86.
Really? Yeah. So what are your main messages? Give us just, you know, some tidbits from some of your books.
Overall, they blend fantasy and reality and myth and mystery and heroes and heroines and virtues, values, and helping children and adults and parents. Basically, a lot of times, look at challenges we have in life and things we're dealing with from a different perspective and an inspirational perspective. So there's no bad guys. There's no bad characters in my books.
Right.
They're really about inspiration and love and encouraging and giving people the tools and techniques and inspiration to achieve their full potential in all ways.
Yeah. Like turning on the love and bliss gene, like you say.
Right. And creativity. You know, as I started writing children's stories, I was fortunate enough to be placed in the same environment as Joseph Chilton Pierce, who was one of the foremost experts in the world on human and child development.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to a lot of lectures by Joseph and talks by Joseph and read all of his books and learned that creativity was the number one quality or aspect that we have as human beings that really provides the foundation for our entire life. And that one of the ways that children develop their creativity is by imagining pictures when they're listening to stories. And they're, as they listen to stories, their entire neural network is being created. And one of the reasons some children like to have the same story read to them over and over and over again is because each reading is cementing something within their neural development on a deeper level. So my books stimulate the children's creativity and their ability to visualize by not providing a picture on every page. So I have a beautiful cover illustration, but most of my stories are blank on the inside because I want the children to picture and feel what they get from listening to the words rather than looking at some adult's impression of what might be happening on that page.
Right.
And the space for parents and children to bond on a deeper level, because you can stop every once in a while and ask your children what they're seeing as they're listening to the story. The reader or the parent can also share what they're visualizing. And in that sharing back and forth, children can also learn that people have different perspectives. You know, they can be reading and listening to the same words, but they're feeling and seeing something different.
Why is creativity so important to humans? You know, and it's something that has almost been taken out of, you know, our children's educational process. But when they use imagination, it's a way of them tuning into their heart and soul and creating their own path. So my question was, you know, why is it so important to you to teach children to be creative?
For what you just said.
Yeah.
Because you summarized it really good. You know, it's like we're all born with this original magic, and societal programming, parental programming, peer programming, it all finds a way to kind of dumb down our originality. And if we can keep children in that constant magic and learning about themselves and learning about life, they can carry that through into every aspect of their life from then on, no matter what they do. And, you know, I never knew that I had this much creativity inside of me. I never knew that I had 80 some children's stories inside of me. And 2 years ago, I sat down to write a story, and all of a sudden it started to flow out in rhyming poetry. And before that, I could rhyme here and there, but never entire stories. And all of a sudden, I found every story I was writing wanted to be done in rhymes. Right. So I know for myself, at 70 years old, I am still finding deeper levels of creativity within myself from even writing the fairy tales. And it's keeping my childlike magic lit up like never before.
Yeah. And what is that? What is that childlike magic? What is that feeling inside when you're being creative from your perspective?
From my perspective, when I'm creating, when I'm writing, everything else in the world totally disappears. And it's almost like I'm listening to somebody telling me a story and I'm just the transcriber.
Yeah.
So every story that, and people ask me, what's your favorite story? And every story I've written is my favorite story, because I don't really see myself as the writer of them. I'm like the transcriber. And so when I go back to read the stories that I've written, I'm amazed. I'm truly amazed at what comes through. And I know that if I tried to write that same story now, it would come out totally different.
So teaching kids to listen to this, it's a muse, isn't it? It's like, and where does this muse come from? That's the magic of it, isn't it? Like, we're so tapped into things that are so much bigger than we are, that, and you're right, we've been dumbed down to not even realize this potential that's within us.
Yeah, and that you know, little children, you know, I remember as a little child, if I found a flower, the first thing I wanted to do was to take it in for my mom and my grandmother to enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
Or if I saw something beautiful in the sky, I just wanted to run in the house and get everybody to come out and look at it. So it's things like that that we did as a child that most people have lost as adults. Not me, man. I had no problem if I'm out walking at 11 o'clock at night in the neighborhood I used to live in, because everybody really knew each other really well. I mean, if I saw some fantastic thing going on in the sky, I would just get on the phone and call somebody and say, get outside. You got to see this now.
Right. It's that inner child, that inner magic that you've kept alive by writing.
Well, it's been rekindled through writing, through 40 years of practicing and teaching various meditation practices, yoga, tai chi, reiki, qigong. And I've had that inner magic in me had to be reawakened, because I consciously shut it down at 5 years old when I didn't feel safe to be me. And it was the birth of my daughter that started to awaken it and awaken me back up to what I had shut down.
Yeah. So that's unfortunately a story that is more prevalent than we wish to believe on planet Earth, isn't it? Where we just don't feel safe.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, to be ourselves, and which shuts down creativity, doesn't it?
It sure does, because we've shut down a natural part of ourselves because we just don't feel safe in expressing it. Like, we will get criticized for what we say or do or a look that we make, rather than just being accepted for who we are as little children. And then that little child makes conclusions based upon that. And it's a little child's mind and brain that isn't fully developed. So it's making false conclusions about things that are happening. And those false conclusions can stay with us until we undo them in one way or another.
Yeah. Yeah. And sometimes we can grow beyond it. But sometimes those programs are pretty prevalent, and it takes a lot to get beyond them.
But I totally agree. I've assisted so many people and worked with so many people, and I've seen transformations take place almost instantly, and people move through 35 years worth of baggage in 20 minutes. And I've seen other people who have had such severe trauma that no matter how much they wanted to clear it, they were unable to do that.
Yeah.
Just because it was so deeply ingrained in them and they were so traumatized.
Yeah. And so unable to get out of that stuck state.
Right. But even the steps of trying to get out are freeing. And nothing's wasted. So in looking at life from a more overall perspective, that this incarnation we're in is just one aspect of us. And we've been incarnated before, and we'll be incarnated again, maybe, depending upon who we are and what's going on.
Yeah.
So any effort that we make, no matter how small, is really huge in our overall development and life path.
Yeah. And just to recognize that we are souls just having a journey here, and we're much more than that, sometimes can move someone beyond it.
Yeah. And learning to tap into that soul essence that we are, and to actually experience the vibration and the light that we are. If somebody had come up to me when I started a spiritual path, which again, I did not go looking for a spiritual path, just like I did not go looking to write books. It fell into my lap. Excuse me.
Yeah. So what are...
I was just going to finish up in that saying, if somebody had told me what I would have to give up on this path that I've chosen, I would have said no way, because I didn't have any experiential basis of what they might tell me going on a spiritual path would do for me. You know, I never even heard the word bliss. I had no concept. You know, if somebody had told me verbally that I could control my mind as easily as I control my body, that when I want to lift up a hand, you know, it just does it instantly. Well, if somebody told me that I could shut off my thoughts and turn them on just as easily as I lift an arm or take a step, I wouldn't have believed them. But my mind only thinks when I want it to think. And it only thinks what I want it to think. If it gets off on little tangents, I just don't let it go there anymore. So I bring myself back to a feeling state of just being love and light. And I see light. I see the world superimposed on a field of light. So I know experientially now that we are more than our physical bodies. We are more than our thoughts. And we can actually live in a state of love and peace and bliss, no matter what's going on in the outer world.
Yes. So when you've trained your mind to think in the direction that you want it to think, and if it goes off in a tangent, what do you do? Just say stop? Just or just go neutral?
At this point, I in Tai Chi and martial arts and Qigong, and even in yoga somewhat, you know, we teach people to focus below the navel at the power center of the body. Mm-hmm. And when you practice literally just focusing your mind below your navel, there's a barrel of laughter there. And so if I can just instantly take my awareness, put it below my navel, and I'm just in total smiles, no matter what's going on. I've used mantras. So any word that is uplifting, inspirational, that connects people with the love they are or the spiritual path they follow, just by repeating one word, whether it's peace, love, Christ, Buddha, Om, no matter what it is, repeating that and keeping your attention on it when you don't have to think about anything else will start to train your mind to do what you want it to do. And so I still use that every once in a while. Pretty much that was a technique for me. And I still use it when my mind doesn't want to be instantly quiet. Other than that, I literally just focus down at the soles of my feet or focus below my navel, let my eyes go soft, and I'm in a field of instant, thoughtless beauty and peace.
Lovely. And why below the navel? What energy is there that works to put us into that laughter? Like you said, it feels a bit like an inner child state that you go into.
Yeah, I actually taught my daughter when she was really young. I mean, it's really easy to teach children to focus down there. One of my children's stories is the Miraculous Magical Button, I believe is the title of it. But in my stories, I like to integrate things that are practical about everyday life. So the story integrates a lot of information about round things and about buttons. And it also teaches children to focus below their belly button. And I've taught children that, and they find that the exercises they do, the sports they do, they're more balanced, they're more solid, that they can literally, one little boy, when he has problems in school studying or doesn't know an answer, he just takes a few moments, he focuses below his navel, breathes a little bit, and he finds the answers come to him. So it's like getting ourselves out of the way and just letting the universal flow come in and tap into that flow, because we really don't have to think. You know, everything that we need will come to us if we're open and receptive to it.
Yeah. So is that one of the messages in that story about the magical button?
Yeah, it's teaching children to focus there. And there are so many things woven within my stories, I don't remember what they all are. Right. They all, you know, like one of the most recent stories I wrote was Sunshine, Starshine, Submarine Sandwiches. And it not only talks about the different types of sandwiches people eat around the world, but it teaches children to make their own submarine sandwich, starting filling themselves with sunshine and blessing everybody in their life when they wake up in the morning. And when they go to sleep at night, they fill their body with starshine. And then the filling of the sandwich is everything they do in the daytime. So there's little hints woven within the story that teach children how to fill their day, their sandwich, with things that will uplift them. And so it teaches them how to focus when they're walking and how to play and how to be present, how to be grateful. So I use common everyday things to bring people back to focusing on all of the power they have within themselves.
Yes, and such amazing tools to teach kids.
Yes, and they work because I experience them. So I'm really just sharing what I've experienced. I stopped reading most books about 30 years ago. I stopped reading all children's stories when I started writing children's stories because I didn't want to be influenced by anything. Mm-hmm. I just wanted the information to come through me from experience and from what I'm, you know, just feeling like needs to be shared based on my experiences of life.
Yeah. Pretty incredible. So you talk to parents too on how to identify and develop a child's unique brilliance. How do you teach them to trust and see that in their own kids?
Well, reading, as Albert Einstein said, if you want your children to be brilliant, read them fairy tales. If you want them to be more brilliant, read them more fairy tales. So Einstein knew that the basis of our brilliance is in listening to stories, imagining, like Joseph Chilton Pierce was talking about, getting that framework, that foundation with which to move forward into life. And, you know, for me, nobody taught me what the developmental stages of human beings are. And as parents, most of us are not taught the developmental stages of children. And it's important to understand that, you know, children between 0 and 18 months and between 18 months and 3 years old and between 4 and 7 and 7 and 12, each of those time periods is a building block for the next time period. And there are certain things that children need to be exposed to and to learn in each phase of life in order to create a solid foundation in which to move forward. So just learning what your child's overall development, the stages they're going through, can help parents shape the way they interact with their children.
Yeah.
And literally just, you know, being present, you know, raising a child, it's the greatest responsibility on earth. It's the one people are least trained for.
True.
And least ready for. So even just learning those child development stages and then learning to be present and open and available for whatever is happening, because children teach you that whatever plans you had, they just don't exist anymore. It's really being present for that child and learning what that child needs and how that child, your child, each child is different and relates to things differently. You know, what may be, we're talking about trauma, and what may be traumatic for one child might not bother another child at all. And so as parents, we really need to learn who our child is and relate to them like that. I mean, I had one lady call me because her son was scheduled for chest surgery. He's 9 years old, and in the center of his chest, like right at the sternum, it was as if somebody had punched him right in the center of the chest as hard as they could. And then when they removed their fist, the impression of the fist stayed there. That's what his chest looked like. And in just talking with this little boy, you know, he explained an incident where his father said something to him. That's when his chest caved in. What his father said made such an impact on his heart. It was like he was punched in the heart with a fist that stayed there forever until, and it caused, he had problems with asthma, had a hard time breathing. And just him sharing this experience that he had with his dad and one energetic attunement we did afterwards, he did not need surgery. The asthma disappeared. And it was amazing. And it just taught me, again, that each person is different and what can harm one might not harm another. And once we look at and are willing to take a look at the timing involved with whatever we're experiencing and when it originated, we can usually get to the source of it. Yeah. And once we've tapped into the source, then a lot of times the outer symptoms disappear quite quickly.
Right. And it's often this childhood programming that stays on that unconscious level and eventually causes physical symptoms.
Oh yeah, I am. I discovered when I started my spiritual path at one point early on in it, my body started shutting down. And I won't go into all the details of it, but that led me to finding Reiki and getting some body work and tuning into that when I was a child, when things didn't go the way that I expected them to go, I said to myself, I want to die. And our subconscious picks that up really quick. And so the next time something doesn't go right, it kicks in, and it only takes two or three times, and then it kicks in automatically. So playing behind the scenes then for the rest of my life up until that point in time, anything, something didn't go the way that I thought it should go on a subconscious level, my subconscious was saying, I want to die. Yeah. And my body, after hearing that for 30 some years, decided, okay, we'll play along with this. And I just had to, in a Reiki treatment, I identified that. Once I saw it, I released it, and all of the physical symptoms disappeared.
Amazing, isn't it?
Yes, totally amazing. And I've witnessed that with so many people. You know, it's just our thought process and our mind that gets a little bit tweaked. And I have an Ayurvedic physician friend who called me up one day and said, would you drive 2.5 hours with me from Southern California out to Palm Desert, because I've been working with a couple for 6 years trying to help them conceive, and I'm stuck. Nothing's working. And so we drove out there, and in talking with this couple, just, you know, sitting on their couch and having a conversation for a couple of hours, the gentleman literally revealed why they were not conceiving. And he had held in his mind that the only child he wanted to bring into his life was a reincarnation of his mother, who was a very spiritual person. They had a room in their house that held all of her sacred objects. And it was more ornate than almost any temple I've ever been in my life. And once I pointed out that maybe you're putting a limitation on God that God does not want there. You know, when you decide to have a child, you can't put an order in like you're ordering French fries. You know, it's like, and once he was willing to release and saw that putting a block there, and with one energetic attunement I did with them before I left, they conceived in 2 weeks after 6 years of trying.
Wow. So that's the power of intention, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the power of intention, and it's the power of, you know, examining our own thought processes and seeing, you know, are we holding a limited thought? And sometimes it just takes somebody else to point out to us that, yeah, you know, there is another way of looking at it. And maybe if you shift it a little bit, things will shift in your life.
Pretty powerful to realize.
Yeah. And we can, you know, it's like setting the intention at the beginning of the day, the minute you get up in the morning, the minute you awaken, and, you know, set your intentions. Send blessings to everybody you know. Send blessings into the world and wake up greeting the world that way. And I found myself one morning waking up, and before, you know, that state when you wake up, right before you wake up, you're kind of conscious, but you're not fully awake. Mm-hmm. It was in that state one morning that I actually watched my mind planning out my day. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't even awake yet. I just thought, this is ridiculous. You know, I am not going to let my mind plan out my day before I'm even awake to find out what it's doing.
Yeah. And it's usually often it's worry, isn't it? Or, you know, stress type thoughts.
Yeah. So again, another reason to, you know, not only have some sort of a meditation practice where you're either sitting, standing, moving meditations, but also to carry that into the world and to keep your mind focused, whether you focus it below your navel, whether you're focusing it on a mantra, whether you're focusing it on just the beauty of the world before you, but constantly ourselves back to center, back to the peace and the love and the joy that we are. And for me, that's why I've been able to write so many children's stories, because my mind is so quiet. It's just like a glass that has nothing poured into it, and God can pour ideas in one right after the other because I'm not thinking about other stuff.
Really important. And gosh, we're so much more powerful than we're led to believe. Is there a story that you know, where you teach kids that to remain in a way quiet enough that they can receive?
That's probably weaved within about 75% of my stories in one way or another.
That's beautiful.
it's a story that I had on the drawing board for years. I wanted to write a story about patience. And I finally came up with the title, Patience, the Impatient Panda. And then after 2 years, I finally got the inspiration and felt like it was time to sit and start writing. And the story took on an entirely different flow than I thought it would. It became more than about patience. It became about other positive P words, like possibilities, like perseverance, practicality. So the story is the life of a panda from the moment it's born through the first 3 years with its mother, and it goes through the mom raising the panda with love, with nonviolent communication. And weaved within the story, there's songs, there's exercises for when children get mad, when they have excess anger energy, and other things. So that one story, which turned out to be Precious Panda Pearls, literally is an entire education in raising a child, from the mental aspect, the physical aspect, exercising, singing, dancing, paying attention to what you're learning, the ups and falls of childhood. And somehow all of that got weaved within the longest story that I've ever written.
Oh, lovely. And I love how you've added, you know, when things don't go right, and anger, right? Because we're human and things happen and we don't always respond perfectly. And so it's important to know how to get out of that, how to, and still love yourself through it, right? So you don't get stuck in it.
Right. And to actually use those energies, not only just feel them, but learning how to use the energy of our feelings to accelerate our growth. For instance, there's a book called the Spanda Karikas, and it's a Indian Hindu text that when I took that class, the only thing in that book that jumped out of me that really resonated with me was the concept that anger is one of the closest feelings and emotions we have to our God source energy, because anger is powerful. So if we take whatever anger we're feeling, and instead of lashing out at somebody else or lashing out at ourselves, if we take and start feeling that energy, I'm going to go back down below the navel again, even lower. If you take all of that anger energy that you're feeling and you put your awareness and put that anger right at the base of your spine, and then inhale and pull and allow all that anger to flow up your spinal column, up to the top of your head, you literally take that anger energy and it burns away and it melts away the source of the anger. So you can use that energy to clear whatever is down there that triggered the anger.
Right. And so to teach kids that, I mean, I had one of my girls was going through a period of extreme sadness. And I said to her, go into anger and burn that out, right? Because, it's above, like if you can go into an energy that's more active, like sadness can be very stagnant, right? You get you get really lethargic, you can't move, you're very down. And so you need to raise that energy just one notch above, right?
Yes. And whatever will do that for you, but that's where our self-effort comes in. And I always look at, for every step we take, God takes 9 steps for us. Mm-hmm. So whatever it is that will get us out of that, if it's humming, if it's listening to music, if it's getting out into nature, whatever we can do to shift those energies and realize, hey, this is temporary. I acknowledge that I'm feeling this way, but I also acknowledge that I can take other steps to shift this. You know, there's nothing wrong with feeling sad for a little bit as long as you don't get lost in it forever.
Yeah, exactly. Well, so many beautiful messages in how many books to count? 88
right now, and I have more that I want to do, and I just have other priorities, unfortunately, because I still have about another 40 or 50 books that I could write that I have outlines for.
Really? That's incredible.
Yep. It is. I'm totally stoked by it. It's like, wow, this is totally cool. I just need the time to write them.
Yeah. So how should parents go about choosing the right books intuitively? What feels right? And where did they find them?
Oh, there's all places you can find books. You can find my books online at timothystutz.com.
That's easy.
it's real easy. And in the last year, I've created, you know, it's like with 88 stories, that's a lot of stories. And so it's an entire library. I created a book club, not only for children, but for their parents. So in the book club, the children get all of the books, audiobook form, ebook form, and they also get a live story time every month. And then we take that story, and during the following month, children can submit drawings, illustration, craft projects. They create their own illustration of what they see happening on as many pages as they want. And then I'm going to select those illustrations and create a fully illustrated by children's book for each of my books. And children can win prizes for doing that. And that book club also has an aspect for parents where we get together twice a month just as a support group. So parents can feel like they have support no matter what's going on in their life. They have a place to come and recenter themselves and share what's alive for them and maybe get some ideas if they have something that they just can't seem to find a solution for.
Mm-hmm. Right. And talk to other parents and you in a safe environment, right? So nice.
Yeah, because when two or more are gathered, magic occurs and ideas pop up. And it's really quite miraculous. And things like that can be, you know, I used to counsel groups and I would, and there was one psychological center that I facilitated a board meeting at where, you know, we took questions that the organization wanted answers for. We asked each question, had everybody sit silently for a few minutes after listening to the question, and then go around the room and ask what people heard in the silence. And it was absolutely amazing how one person would have one piece of the puzzle, another person would share something, they'd have another piece of the puzzle, and they operated their organization like that. And it was magical.
Ooh, I love that. Because that is the magic, isn't it? When many go to their place of heart, they can, as we each contribute, we contribute to the whole, and then something incredible comes from it.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. Quite a magical process. And even the ideas for so many of my children's stories have just come from the interactions I've had with my parents, interactions with my daughter, watching animals. Ideas can pop up anywhere.
So inspirational. Timothy, is there one last thing you could leave with parents, one last thought? And of course, I think going to your website and just starting would be beautiful. and inspirational. But is there one last thought you could leave with parents?
Yeah, there's at the website in the menu section, there's a freebie tab, and I have lots of guided meditations and fairy tales and songs and a free training on three magic wands for more creative, happier, empowered children. There's wonderful freebies there. And I think I'm also, you know, I'm willing to talk to anybody who's like, says, wow, it's like you said, where do I start? You know, so in a simple conversation, you know, we can find out, just learn about your family a little bit and give a suggestion for you. Start here.
Yeah.
And then go there. But overall, it's really a matter of keeping things simple. Breathing, bringing our hands to our heart often during the day and just calming ourselves, you know, taking time to pause between activities. You know, the magic of music is not only what we hear, it's what we don't hear. The magic on a piece of paper when somebody creates a work of art, it's not only the paint they put on the canvas, it's the areas they've left blank. And so if we can take time, and even Tai Chi, there's movement, and between the movements, we're resting. We're allowing the energy that we generated during the movements to come back into harmony in our body. So the movements stimulate and circulate the chi or the energy. And when we come back to rest, the energy stored in our bones, in our body, and below our navel. And it's that few moments of rest that allows that to happen. When we go to sleep at night, it allows everything to rejuvenate and restore itself. So taking time to pause, to rest, to slow down, and to stay in touch with that inner magic, that peace, that calmness, that love we are as we go about our day. And if we get triggered, have breathing exercises, simple, bring your hands to your heart, watch a few breaths go in and out of your heart, and calm yourself down and start over. And same way, if you're feeling triggered with an adult or a child, you know, we're allowed to walk away from situations that are turning into bonfires. You know, we don't have to put more fuel on the bonfire. You know, just walk away and get centered and come back with a clear head, clear heart.
Beautifully said. Thank you so much, Timothy.
Oh, thank you, James. It's been so wonderful to share with you.